Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Robbie Burton about heart rate training.
Gonna just get into the heart of the matter.
Oh, very good, Ben.
Yeah, was it? Yeah. No, I don't think we're allowed to. Listen to
your heart. All that stuff.
Follow your heart, guys.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, it's an area actually, Ben, that I think you probably have delved more into than me. Unsurprisingly to listeners who know me as something of a Luddite.
Well,
the Luddite of running.
The thing is, you'll know more about it than you think. It's just that I've looked at like what it appears like on a screen, whereas you'll know you know a lot about it. You'll know what you're very good at managing your effort. You know, you know what it feels like. You just haven't got like, you haven't quantified it with a zone or a number on a screen and
yes.
Gone, oh, so when I'm doing that and it feels like this, that equates yes. to me sitting at 168 beats a minute and feeling sick. Like, that's kind of what heart rate training is all about. Robbie gets into it in much more detail and with great eloquence and all those sorts of things that you expect from him. But yeah, it is something that I've used for training and I still use for training, and I like it because it's a useful metric when it comes to sort of effort. But it's one of lots of different metrics and it can be affected by lots of different things. So it's not like gospel. And I think that's the important bit. And Robbie gets into that.
Yeah, I think that's it. I guess the hope with these things is that we want people who maybe feel a little bit intimidated by heart rate training or maybe have some preconceptions about it to finish the podcast with a bit more clarity, perhaps.
That'd be
on
good.
This issue. So that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Oh, look, I've got a bit of news you can use, which is based around heart rate training. So look, this is a bit of chat for you. Your max fat burn zone is at roughly 60% of your maximum heart rate, according to a new study. And for those who use heart rate zones, that's zone 2 intensity. So
wow. That was incredibly generalised. I hope that study's more succinct than that. I mean, that I love that.
Yeah, 60% of your maximum heart rate. If you want to do fat burn, that is actually quite an interesting, like, sort of thing that I'm not sure all runners know. Is that actually when we're talking about fat burning, as opposed to kind of burning fats, as opposed to burning carbohydrates?
Yeah,
actually,
we're not talking about weight.
The slower running that does that.
It crosses over into like running for weight loss, and of course, if that's how you use running, then all the power to you. But I think it's a useful one when we talk about energy sources within the body. One of them's fat, one of them's carbs. Where does it do what? What effort relates to what being burnt? So that's quite an interesting study in relation to endurance running, lower heart rate effort, what's the energy source? And Robbie, thankfully, goes into this as well when we asked him about it. So it's a good study to sort of back up what we talk about later on. So there we go.
Well, that's what we aim to do. Look, I think there's a lot to cover here with heart rate training. So shall we get him on?
Yeah, let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is a coach, ultra runner, and the British record holder for 24-hour running. Here to tell us more about all he knows about heart rate training, it's Robbie Britton. Welcome back to the Runner's World podcast.
Thanks, Rick. I know about all I know. There's some secrets that some best like left untold, surely.
Yeah. But that's true. Yeah,
yeah. I'll share a vast majority of it.
See what we can cover in 25 minutes. That's all we ask. Look, let's start with the top line then. What exactly, in simplest possible terms, is heart rate training? What do we mean when we use that term?
Blimey. That's such a simple but complicated question.
Yes.
For me, I guess like it's the monitoring of your heart rate during exercise, either for the prescription of training or for the analysis after the fact,
okay.
Or a bit of both.
Yeah. Very good.
That was really good.
That was very succinct. That was very good. Yeah.
That was very succinct, wasn't it? So when we sort of like people sort of rattle on about it, runner's world, everyone else, and we talk about heart rate zones and all that sort of training, what are we talking about?
It depends what zone model you're talking about. I think there's anywhere from 3 to 74 zones. like especially if you're looking at hummingbirds, I feel like they've got a good range. They've got like at least 70 zones. A
lot of top end.
Yeah. A lot of it, I think when we talk about kind of like heart rate zones, we're looking at exercise prescription and like what, like how you should be setting out your training. So you hear like about the 80-20 kind of 80% of your training should be below a certain level, 20% a little bit more, a little harder. And so that can be done with different ways of kind of monitoring that, heart rate being one of them. Heart rate zones, yeah. My watch tells me there's 5.
Yes,
but I think I've told my watch to tell me there's 5.
Okay, that makes sense. So I just want to get the basics really clear. So say we go with the 5 zones, Rob, because I think that's probably the most commonly familiar with, isn't it? And you have zone 1, zone 2, zone 3, zone 4, zone 5. Roughly speaking, what kind of activities are going to be in zone 1 and zone 2? Like what, because zone 2 training gets talked about a lot. Are we talking about, we're talking about easy jogging in those spaces, is that right?
Yeah, so like I suppose if we're gonna go beyond the numbers, you might say that some list 1 as recovery, 2 is primarily still aerobic training or a hard workout. And then you have, I think I've seen it, tempo, interval, and then, yeah, the zone 5 is just the zone of death. That's the academic name. So like I think for me, the bulk of your training should be around 1 and 2. So like I like to have graphs at this point to show it doesn't work well in a podcast. But like if you're talking in terms of lactate training, which obviously overcomplicates things, that's the, like your lactate threshold is the pace you can hold for like an hour, right? That's a hard workout and that's a specific thing we try and train. Stuff below that can come anywhere between zones 1 and 2. Zone 1 can be really easy. You just kind of, you're trotting around. And zone 2, again, that can be, for me personally, it's not the bulk of my training. I kind of drift up into it. I go back to zone 1 and like it's an easy run is within those 2. And I try to avoid them going out of that area into the slightly harder workout.
Hmm. That's interesting, yeah.
And how do you benchmark then? So say if someone's sitting there going, well, how do I benchmark my fitness, say, if they're new to running or they're not as fit as, you know, a conditioned athlete? How are they going to see that sort of zone? Are you going to go, right, you need to run as hard as you can to work out your max, and then like 70% of that, 60% of that is what you're aiming for?
The first thing I would say to people is that you want to be able to see a difference. If you're using heart rate, you want to see a difference between your easy runs, your hard runs, and your stuff in the middle. So like I would probably get people to start looking at free zones to start with. If you're new to heart rate, like heart rate training, get an idea where your hard workouts are, 5K, like 10K kind of workouts, right? Then have a rough idea about where it is kind of half marathon effort, and then get down to your easy stuff. Because again, if you're talking about, it depends on the level you're talking. Someone, if they're sub 3 hours for the marathon, that their marathon's still going to be in the middle of those two groups, and it's not quite easy. But if someone's running 5, 6, or 7 hours for the marathon, their marathon pace is probably in that zone too. It's kind of towards the easier end of it, like aerobically, but actually it's not easy, right? You've got to do it for 6, 7 hours. So I would look at it, if you want to get an idea at first, start trying to tell the difference between them. And even like for your kilometer rep session, like we want, if you're using heart rate for that, we want to see where it's going up to in those reps, and then that it's coming down again. If it's not coming down, that's what we call a float recovery. It's different, right? If you're actually standing still, you want to see that heart rate drop. You want to see your warm up lower than it is in your first rep, right? So like if we're starting to use heart rate, just start to get an understanding for where your own levels are and your own kind, like just start, look, so that's why I like it for after a session. Like, I'll use it before, like, I use it, I've got like a lot of information, so I can kind of say, look, this is for my 24-hour racing, I have a heart rate I try and aim for my half marathon, for my marathon, I've got ideas. And then when I train at those effort levels in training, I know I use those as kind of a rough guide. I still go on how I feel, because different stuff can change on the day, and a heart rate can be impacted by caffeine, by adrenaline, by nerves and stress or lack of sleep. But I use it in that regard. But I also look at it afterwards, and I want to see what I want to be able to tell. So say I had a session, right? Say we had the K reps this morning, but we're starting in the first, say you got six of them, and you want to do the first couple at half marathon effort and then get gradually quicker. You'd want to see the heart rate doing that as well. And you might then be able to take that into your next time you're using it. So look, I know that's actually something I can sustain for this amount of time. And that starts getting you, I don't know, like, it's kind of paint by numbers, getting your numbers and then trying to take it from the data you've got, rather than jumping straight. And if I said go, I mean, yeah, you're probably safe. If you're saying 60% of your max heart rate, you're probably going to be going easy. But for some people, that's going to be walking. So it's then kind of, okay, where do I lie in that? And for some people, the difference between, you've got a thing called your heart rate reserve as well, which is the amount of beats per minute between your resting heart rate and your max heart rate. And for some people, I've got a reasonably higher resting heart rate than others, but I've got, for my age, a reasonably higher max heart rate. So then my kind of scale, I'm using my hands again, it's a podcast, but my scale drifts along, whereas other people have got a much lower, and it's a lot of that can be genetic as well, a lower resting heart rate. And then they might find that the heart rates they operate on a day-to-day basis are lower, but their maximums, so I think my max, I hit 188 on Monday night on a Zwift race. Wasn't pleasant, but like most of my running is done at like 125 to 135 beats a minute. So there's a big range there, and having that understanding of it, like that's I think for me was one of the benefits. And if you're starting to get into heart rate training, the first couple of weeks I'd just wear it. I'd just look at it after. I wouldn't be looking at it going, oh, the watch is telling me to slow down. Like, if you know you run too fast all the time, then yeah, let the watch tell you to slow down. But if you just want to see and then look back at it, and if you can't tell the difference looking back from your easy runs and your threshold workouts and your K reps without looking at, like when you're looking at the heart rate profile, then you're doing something a little wrong, or you're using wrist-based heart rate.
Right. Well, that is good, a good segue into educating us on kit. So we've talked about like educating ourselves on the sort of the process of analysing the data, but how are we going to get this data? Like, most running watches now come with some sort of wrist-based heart rate monitor in them. They are effective to a degree. Would you say if you wanted to do this properly, a chest strap is where people need to start, or is it you can get enough data from a wrist-based?
I have been an outspoken anti-wrist-based person in the past. Like, a lot of the studies that have shown that they are accurate are done in cycling or at lower levels of activity. So it depends what you're trying to get out of it. I'm guessing if you're listening to the Runner's World podcast, you're not looking for primarily cycling advice. They have to be reasonably tight on the wrist if you are wearing it. I've got a piece of metal in my left wrist, so that I think that maybe interferes with it as well. And if you're going up and down hills, I feel the wrist base is too impacted by I used to work with TomTom and they said it wasn't arm swinging in there, but something to do with it's impacted by it going up and down hills. You still see it with some, like, I can tell looking at Strava in a mountain race if someone's wearing a wrist or a chest strap.
Right.
If you're just starting out and it seems to be telling you roughly what you think that's happening, and you're primarily running on the flat, then try out with don't dive into an expensive chest strap straight away. If you find that you're running with your wrist heart rate monitor and you're learning and you're kind of enjoying that part of it, don't let it kind of take over your world. But if you're enjoying the heart rate training, then I would look at either a chest strap, or they've got new ones that go on the arm. And they've been shown to be kind of level with the chest straps in terms of accuracy and reliability. Those are the two things you're looking for, is accuracy and reliability. I'm a fan of the Garmin Pro. I got two of them behind me. That's my backdrop. I thought I'd make a good qualifier, but I only have two because I'll run twice most days, and it's horrible in the summer to put on the sweaty one the second time. So I had this like luxury item of a second heart rate strap. But yeah, like that, the heart rate, the chest strap, and the arm band are the most accurate and reliable.
The better way to go. In terms, Robbie, of like what's the benefits of doing heart rate training above, say, I'm just training to pace? Because I guess that's probably the other way people look at it. It's like, I'm just going out for this is 8 minute mile in. Like, why do I need to know about heart rate? What's the kind of benefit of it?
So it depends what you're training for, right? So if you are training for a marathon, you need to practice that set pace, then it can be useful. But with heart rate, it can take into account a load of external factors, such as a windy day, right? If you're running 8 minute miles and there's a massive gust of wind in your face, you need to adjust that pace for the same effort. If you're tired, if your heart rate can be impacted by things like lack of sleep, which changes our perception of effort. So then we're not working as hard as we think we are. There's loads of stuff that heart rate can kind of take into account. Hot days, dehydration. So that heart rate can help us train to effort. And for me, it helps us train more intelligently in regards of our consistency. Because if we're constantly tied to a pace and we have to work harder to get it, or like on an off day, we're digging a hole when we should be just relaxing a bit, our heart rate can be a good reminder, like, hey, hold on a second. For me, your trusty heart, this is harder work than usual. We should back off a bit. And you're like, nah, legs feel fine. Your heart's like, well, which is more important? I've seen plenty of people live without legs, but how many people live without a heart? So that's the listening to your heart in that regard. Equally as well, some people say when they talk about heart rate, so, well, it's impacted by caffeine, it's adrenaline, nerves, all this stuff. We can't trust it. I prefer good old-fashioned, like, how I'm feeling, which is great, right? I like to combine the two and use pace. But that's, people then think that how we're feeling isn't impacted by everything around us as well. How we're feeling is impacted by the wind, by by our sleep, by our kind of how angry we are, what music we've got on, and if someone overtakes us, or how, like, I love churning on about rate of perceived effort, but that's impacted. If you're running out doing your efforts, right, and you're cruising around, you're thinking, I'm on top of the world, this feels easy, this is exactly the pace I need to go, and then someone like Laura Muir is out doing an easy run at 5:30 minute miling and overtakes you, right, chauvinist or not, like, you're going to be like, whoa, hold on a second, I'm rubbish. That's what your brain tells you, and your heart's like, no, this is good, we're bang on, like, stop listening to your head, it's rubbish. So then it's kind of like, it's not perfect. No kind of way of doing things is really, but it can be really useful. And I think slightly more in some more than others, slightly more useful than gauging via our own perception of effort.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And do you think it's an important one then? It's not the one metric to be benchmark above others. This is just that you've got to consider it as part of a package. So when we sort of like educate yourself on heart rate, It doesn't mean you're just now out, you know, you're switching off every other thing on the watch and all you're seeing is you're just studying your heart going up and down. It's got to be like a joint venture between that and pace and, I don't know, any other thing that you want to look at.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. I think some people do, they kind of, that's the problem with a lot of like training solutions, should we say. Like they have to, it's just this above all else. But actually, like you've got, and not just on your watch, but like the greatest, it's your head and how you're feeling. And like that, like if your heart rate's spot on and your pace is spot on, but you feel like an absolute mess, then just ease back, right? Because in terms of your training, that's, you're using a better gauge than any of those two. If it feels super easy and your heart rate's kind of through the roof, then yeah, take that information in. But then just kind of like, sometimes it can be an error with the heart rate strap. It can be the battery getting low. It could be something like on the wrist one, when you're going downhill, it might drop. Like there's all kinds of things that we can't just rely on it. Sometimes when you put a heart rate strap on for the first time, you've got to wet the receptors. Otherwise it waits until you start sweating. And sometimes people see a spike at the start, and yeah, like 99% of the time, that's just because it's getting ready. Sometimes it's your heart, right? So you just got to be careful of that stuff. But it's, we can't use it in isolation. Again, my run this morning was 2 hours, nice and easy. And I run around, and if I was just focusing on the heart rate, I wouldn't, for one, be able to listen to the Infinite Monkey Cage podcast, which obviously just after the run as well, right? But like,
good.
Yeah. But I wouldn't enjoy the run as much. I'd just be focusing on this number going up and down that I can control, but can't really. I can, but I suppose it's a bit of two ways. Whereas, like, if you're there and you're checking it, and generally, I quite like it. If you can get to a point where you know that heart rate's crept up, you get to a hill and you're like, oh, I wonder what it is here. Oh, it is that number. Oh, or you get a bit excited because a music track comes on and you know you've changed your effort without looking at the watch, but then the watch confirms it with the heart rate. That can be a really good gauge for racing and for kind of getting used to it. And it might not always be there. I ran 50K a couple of years ago, last year, year before, I don't know, one of these years. And just before, in my warm-up, the battery died in my heart rate monitor. And I was dead set on using the heart rate because I hadn't raced that distance in a long time to gauge my effort. So I had to just, I'll stick with pace and RPE. And it wasn't there. And I had to gauge it entirely myself. And I'd been relying on the heart rate beforehand. And if you rely on it too much, that can really derail you. And it's kind of just important to realize that it's not the be-all and end-all, but it can be a useful tool, but one tool in a varied toolbox.
Yeah. It sounds like it's something that you would use in the race itself, and not just a training tool, but actually something that you would use while racing. Do you think it is as useful in that context?
Yes. Yeah, and I think it can be really useful in a race if you've got a good grasp of where it should or shouldn't be. I know that roughly for a half marathon, mine can sit around, 180, 181. For a marathon, it should be around, it shouldn't be over, the low 170s in the early stage of a marathon. I generally find it's about not working too hard in the early stages. One, especially if you've tapered for a race, you could be as fit as you've ever been, and actually what feels comfortable from a physical kind of muscular point of view is actually a little bit faster than usual, because you're usually doing all this marathon training on tired legs, and suddenly you get to race day, your legs are popping and you're like, well, hold on a second, 520s feels like 530s did last week. You can use miles or k's for that interpretation. And suddenly you're running off the pace, like a pace that isn't sustainable for the amount of time that you want to be running that marathon. Whereas the heart rate might give you a better idea. Okay, you've got to take into some pre-race nerves, but it gives you a better idea. I like it for that. I like it for, okay, I shouldn't go above this. And sometimes, my marathon PB was in Valencia, which has obviously grown in popularity, maybe because of the series of articles I wrote about it.
Because of what you did.
Yeah.
Because of what you did.
And at the first half of the race, I found myself with the lead ladies group, which was a 520s then. It was slower those days. And after a while, after about a mile, I was like, I shouldn't be here. I should be with another group, a few groups back. So I eased back a little bit, but my heart rate crept up. And around the halfway point, it was at a point beyond what it should have been. So I could either stop and let it drop, slow down below the pace I wanted to run, or just ignore it because it was no longer telling me something that was useful. And I chose to do the latter. I was like, this situation, I put myself here. And I ended up running a much higher heart rate than I would have normally done for a marathon. I probably had I did have a positive split in the race. Like the second half was definitely slower. I was getting overtaken by a lot of people. I managed to achieve my goal. Maybe I could have gone a bit quicker if I'd have paid more attention to my heart rate in the first half. But in that second half, it was only going to make me feel sad seeing it. Like it was like an average of, it was above my half marathon at like total average at about 12 miles in. So like I had another hole and it went up. Yeah, it was huge. It was well off the scale of what I would, if I'd have looked at it, I'd have gone, oh no, I'm working too hard. Whereas in reality, that information wasn't useful to me then. So I went to another screen, which was average pace. And was like, well, that's the only one that matters. Yeah,
that looked great.
That was yeah. Moving in the wrong direction, you could say. So it's kind of use it when it's useful to you.
Yeah.
If you know you start too fast, then hey, could be a big win there. If you know you don't start fast enough, start faster.
Yeah. Is it a metric that's more useful than for distance? Would you say for like when you're doing these big long races and you know you need to be able to comfortably sit 130 120 whatever it is otherwise because you know you've got such a long race ahead of you, is distance, longer distance stuff like half marathon, marathon and beyond, is this heart rate better for that? Like 5k 10k shorter stuff seems to be more just about like going and holding on and your heart rate will just be high and that's kind of a given.
That's the gig. Yeah.
So there's a lag in how soon it gets to the point it's telling you what's going on, right? So like if you set off too fast in a 5k, by the time your heart rate tells you you're going too fast, it's most likely too late. Same, that's why people in prescription of like efforts, if they're shorter efforts, we wouldn't use heart rate as say some even like 800s or 400, like anything that short, because by the time it's kind of stabilized or plateaued at the effort you're working at, you're done. Right. Especially even more so like doing hill sprints or strides, like by the time it's like it's probably peaking after you stop the effort, which is no use in terms of prescription. But looking back on it, you can then see a story from that. So for like 5K, 10K, if it's kind of going up and then just staying high the whole way, great. And you feel like you're finishing strong. Like, couple it in with the pacing data. OK, have you run a PB? Right, that's a good sign. If it's dropping off to the end of your 5K or your 10K, then I would say you're probably working too hard and maybe there's something there you could work, like you could go, okay, look, next time. And that's the beauty of a 5K or 10K. You can do them slightly more often than a 24-hour race. I would kind of look at it in that regard. If you know, like it might be that you could, okay, I know if I go over 185 for 10K, right, I know I'm going into the red zone. Like I've got minutes left and I'm only 5K in. You could use it, yeah, for sure, but like not as easily as you might for one of the longer distances because you ease in. The first few miles are more sustainable. Like the 5K is hard from pretty early doors. Same with the 10K. And then with the longer stuff, you can also tie into stuff like your metabolic use. So what you're burning in terms of carbs, what you're burning in terms of fats. So what's going to slow me down for marathon and beyond is less likely my heart giving up. That's one thing, but 24-hour racing, it's my heart doesn't go,
well, that's enough.
You run out of energy, you get really tired. Hopefully, touch wood, I've got more to come. So if I this will be a dark podcast, play it afterwards. Sorry.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Sorry,
yeah.
Mum.
Sorry.
But yeah, like you can use it in terms of I know that if I'm at this level, I'm burning this many carbs and this much from fat, and if I'm working harder,
that's interesting.
And that could be not necessarily tied to pace, it could be the heat, the humidity, all kinds of bits and bobs. The value goes up the further you go along, but it just depends when you're using it. Like I like looking at someone's data for a 5k and a 10k with a heart rate, because it should just steeply go up and then gradually climb until there's a little spike at the end when they sprint to the finish. That's ideally what you'd see. If it's another thing I like to look at is if there is ups and downs in a race, if people can't, like if you can see that on the heart rate profile. If you can't see the heart rate profile like in terms of ups and downs, I think you can work on that as well, and you should be slightly lower going downhill. You should be not, like if you're working too hard on the uphill and you get to the top and then your heart rate doesn't recover on the way down a little bit, even if you're staying fast, then there's sort of things you can work on. So yeah, there is information you can garner from it.
On that, because it's an interesting point that you mentioned in terms of nutrition and strategy around that and how heart rate can inform that, can you just expand on that a bit, like how heart rate relates to fat burning, carb burning, you know, energy sources.
I'm going back to my privilege of being able to get in a laboratory and look at that. So like we do things like measuring the like gas analysis, so like the oxygen carbohydrate going in and out, and the kind of levels tell us via some fancy algorithms that I've got no idea about, tell us how, what percentage of the energy we're burning is coming from carbohydrates or stored body fats. And at different effort levels, that will increase it. Generally, like at lower effort levels, it might be 80% fat, 20% carbs. As you get closer to your marathon pace, it's probably going to, like, it'll sneak up to 50-50. And at that point, it then switches over and it's like 60-40, 80-20 the other way, until at like 5K effort, you're primarily like 100% of what you're burning is carbohydrate, because your body's working too hard to go through the slightly more laborious task of processing stored body fat. So it's like just grabbing it where it can. So like if you have that information, you can use that and then kind of tie that to your heart rate. And one like a way of looking at this outside of a laboratory is, this is me kind of guessing stuff here more than anything. There's an idea around cardiac drift, right? So if you're running this, say we're running 8 minute miles, and we keep that pace the same, we're on a track, there's very little kind of external issues. If your heart rate starts to rise for that same effort, that same pace the whole way around, but your heart rate's so like after an hour and a half, it's 10 beats or higher for the same pace, that's what we would call cardiac drift. So it's kind of you're going the same pace for a higher effort. And if you can manage your heat, your hydration and your nutrition effectively, you can keep that drift or you can minimize that drift. So if you are looking at longer races, if you're doing a long run, looking at your marathon, you're testing your fuel, if you get to the end of that and your heart rate isn't kind of like 20 beats a minute higher for the same pace, then that's a good sign. It's not the most scientific, but it's one I think you could look at. And if you're getting to the end of a 2 hour run, 2.5 hour run, and the same pace is kind of 15, 20 beats a minute higher, there's something to do with your pacing, your nutrition, your hydration, or your training. Kind of like, there's other factors that you could look at and try and improve, and that could be something you try to improve in the future. And until then, you could try 10 minutes a mile slower and see how that impacts your heart rate over the course. If it limits the cardiac drift, then that's a more sustainable effort level for you, at a slightly lower pace. So that's how I would use it there. And it doesn't tell us fats, carbs, thermoregulation, what the factor is, but it kind of gets all of those together, which is going to happen in a race anyway, and gives us an idea, okay, well, how can we mess around with this? What can I change that will impact me individually?
There you go. Robbie, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for coming on the Runner's World podcast talking. It wasn't all you know about the heart, but it was some good stuff there, I'd say.
Yeah, we kept some secrets. Mine's still going. So it's all right. So you can trust on that. Yeah. My heart works, and it works for a long time.
Best of luck with all your running, Robbie, as well. We look forward to seeing what you're up to in 2024 as well.
Some good stuff. I'm going to do 100K next. I'm going to try that out, because I haven't got one of those, really. Like, not a proper one. I've done them kind of on the way.
Okay,
And I'll
on a track?
On a park-like loop in Holland. The Ho-Ho 100. Right? Felt like a good time of year to... And it's in the memorial of a guy called Marco Groot, who I met like a few years ago at like different 24 hour races. Unfortunately, he's passed away, but I'm going to go and do his memorial race. So that's like, I was like, oh, that's cool. But 100K is good fun. And that, again, I think massively ties into the cardiac drift stuff. I'll be looking at that for the course of 100K. How much can I limit that for that distance?
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Robbie Britton, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer to get this exclusive listener offer. I mean, I haven't actually checked that link for a while. I imagine it still works. I hope it still does. If not, just Google, let us know, podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. Also, just Google Runner's World subscription. That's a better idea, because then you can get all of the issues for the whole year to your front door. Not just 3, all of them. And that's much better. Please distribute this podcast willy-nilly. Just throw it out there on WhatsApp groups. Just let people know that it's happening. Subscribe if you haven't already. And you'll hear from us again next week.
Perfecto.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.